Hey, this is the weekly show all about weather. This is Weather Brains, episode number 370 for the 25th of February, 2013. Glad you're here. I'm James Spann. A little late in getting started this week. For those that are watching and listening live, we do apologize. But so it goes sometimes in the world of live media. But look who's back with us this week. We've got Kevin Selle in Dallas-Fort Worth, who just ate a delicious bowl of Campbell's soup.
Was I away?
No, you were here last week. Who was missing last week?
In fact, as I recall, I think I did the whole show last week.
I think you did.
You sat around eating Campbell's chunky soup.
Yeah. So how was it, Campbell's chunky soup? Is it pretty good?
It was good.
Good. Kevin is in Dallas-Fort Worth, and you had a wild blizzard out there in the panhandle today, did you not?
You know what's always funny about blizzard warnings that people wonder about? Because the snow had really ended in the eastern panhandle for much of the afternoon, evening. But the blizzard warning was supposed to go until midnight, and they ended up canceling it a little early. But people are always amazed by the idea that you don't, or the fact that you actually, it doesn't have to actually be snowing to have blizzard conditions. If the wind is strong enough and there's enough blowing snow, you can have blizzard conditions and thus a blizzard warning. And now I'm going to go.
Okay. Let's just do this now. You know, one of the friends of the show, Matt Ernst, has some audio of what happened out there today. So, and again, we're doing this on the, 25th of February. Amarillo had, I believe, 17 inches of snow. They had a wind gust to hurricane force at the airport, which is pretty remarkable. And Matt is down in Lubbock. So let's get this report from our roving correspondent, Matt Ernst, who is in Lubbock.
Hey, Weather Brains friends. A major blizzard lifting northeast away from the Texas Panhandle and Texas South Plains, now moving across Oklahoma and Kansas tonight as the show's produced here on Monday, February 25th. First, the bad end of it. One person is reported dead from a roof collapse in Woodward, Oklahoma, and the heavy snow there. Here in Lubbock, reports just coming in this evening of an ambulance that wrecked. According to Fox 34 News, maybe serious injuries in that case. Now, on to the snow totals. Record snowfall in Lubbock today, 3.4 inches. Not anything too great for our area, but the visibility was reduced at times down to just about zero, and much of the day below a quarter of a mile. North wind at 30 to 40, gusting past 50 miles per hour. 3.4 inches, though, ain't nothing compared to what we saw north of here. Some of JB's favorite city names here, like Littlefield with 6 inches, Plainview with 8 inches. North of there, Tulia, Texas with 15 inches. All these cities in my area. Now let's go north into the Texas Panhandle. Widespread totals of more than a foot of snow came in. Amarillo also set a daily record, but a little more impressive than here in Lubbock. Amarillo with 19 inches of snow. According to the Weather Service website, 19.3 inches is the most ever back in 1934 there. But again, 19 inches in Amarillo. Even with just a few inches of snow here, travel was difficult because of significant blowing snow and also the snow drifts. TxDOT across the panhandle around Amarillo actually had to just completely stop treating the roads, called all their trucks in. The trucks were getting stuck, so pretty much the interstates, U.S. highways, everything was shut down. Also, a peak gust recorded on the Amarillo ASOS today, a peak gust of 75 miles per hour. Interesting day here across Texas, and that storm now lifting up into parts of Kansas. Back to you guys. Actually, I'm sorry. From the Weather Brains Texas Bureau West, Matt Ernst.
Boy, he was good. I mean, that was, he's got the radio pipes and everything. That was good.
I have a suggestion. If each of the listeners would do something like that each week, we wouldn't have to do this program anymore.
There you go. Just send us
some
audio.
Everybody hop on that.
Just send us some audio. We've got a little bit of audio from some of the email stuff, so no, that's good stuff. But no, I was watching some of Reed Timmer's stuff. He's out there in Woodward, Oklahoma, or Woodward. Kevin, you're closer.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
You have no clue.
Nope.
But the first reports were that a Walmart had lost its roof from a collapse, and that apparently was not a reliable report. There was a house that, as Matt said, there was a house where there was a roof that collapsed, and one person was killed there.
You know, that's one of the really, I think, really important downsides.
Yo. Send one more invite real quick, please.
Okay. We're trying to get our guest on, by the way. That's the situation here. So.
Well, while you're doing that, I think that's one of the real important downsides that people should be aware of to social media and the river of news and the news stream is in the early stages of any story, you're going to get erroneous reports. And that can be a problem, especially, you know, for things that are life-threatening and so on and so forth. So, you know, people need to pay attention to these things very, very carefully and make sure that it's a vetted source many times.
Yeah, Woodward, thanks to Mike Cox. Woodward, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
But no,
Mike, send us some audio.
But that storm is producing some active weather over a lot of regions, and I think Chicago is going to wind up. What, Brian? You're our Chicago expert, Brian Peters. What, 6 inches of snow from this thing?
6 inches is what they're forecasting up there.
Wow.
My daughter has an interview for a job first thing tomorrow morning, and hopefully the snow will hold off till the afternoon. So get there and get home.
The snow totals map on the National Weather Service Amarillo site is interesting to look at because there's a really well-defined back edge to the heavy snow. In Dumas, they got 13 inches, but then one county to the west, just a few miles to the west, a place called Channing, it's only 4 inches. So what's that 9-inch difference just in a couple of miles? Pretty interesting.
Deformation axis, man. Thing sets up and it's nasty.
Right.
But, yeah, it's also producing some active weather in terms of in the warm sector with severe thunderstorms. In fact, I'm watching with an eye. Ooh, our guest is on the line. Is it our guest?
Yes.
Success. Nate, you're a genius. Nate is our get the guest online officer.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and again. All right.
Marshall, I'm so sorry. Marshall's been trying to get on with us for 30 minutes now. But you're looking good. Looks like you're in your home setting there. You look good. How you doing? Okay, good. Sounds like the bandwidth might be a little constrained, but I'm going to let Nate officially introduce you here in just a second, and hopefully it'll be a little smoother at that point. But Nate Johnson, you have worked and worked and worked, and you have your man on the show, so I'll turn the floor over to you, sir.
All right, and I want to welcome our guest, a very distinguished guest. We're very happy to have him on tonight. He's the newly elected and newly office-having taken president of the American Meteorological Society. He's also a faculty member with the Department of Geography at the University of Georgia. His degree from a PhD from Florida State University in physical meteorology. He's the first African-American to receive a PhD from Florida State. That's pretty big deal there. And a member of Sigma Xi, which is the research honorary for meteorology and for science in general. And also a member of the Epsilon Pi Meteorology Honor Society, Omicron Delta Kappa. Big stuff. He's doing some really cool things, and we want to talk to you all kinds of stuff. Oh, no. He's gone again. Oh, he's back. He's back.
Yeah, he's back.
There we go.
No, there. And I was going to say, you know, of course, the crowning achievement on top of all those things you mentioned is the fact that now he's been on Weather Brains. So now it doesn't get any better.
Right. Yeah. James got intimidated by his credentials and cut him off.
So anyway, let's welcome Dr. Marshall Shepard to the show. Welcome. So first off, first welcome to the show. Now that we can hear you, I can't see you, but we can hear you.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about the AMS. We'll sort of start there and then branch out from there. But you've taken over the AMS, the presidency of the AMS, after being a year of president-elect. And tell me a little bit about the AMS. We have some folks who listen to the program maybe not familiar with the AMS. Tell us a little bit about the organization and what you hope to do with it over the next year.
Okay, sure. So the AMS, the American Meteorological Society, it's the largest and oldest of the professional societies here in the United States and essentially worldwide. We promote the atmospheric and related sciences. Many of your viewers are familiar with the fact that the AMS, formerly the AMS seal and now the Certified Broadcast Meteorologist, the CBM, is certified through the AMS. The major conferences in our field in association with weather are run through the AMS, along with NWA as well. AMS publishes several of the gold standard journals in the field of weather meteorology. We promote education. We have a policy program. So it really is, you know, I tell my friends, if you know a lawyer, more than likely they're a member of the American Bar Association. I can't imagine any meteorologist or enthusiast not being associated with the major professional and science society in the field of meteorology. So that kind of, in a nutshell, captures some of what we're about.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, you know, some of the work the AMS has done, you mentioned the certification program for broadcast Yep. meteorologists. There's also a similar one for consulting meteorologists.
That is correct.
What is that about, and what role do you see those folks playing in the future of our field?
Yeah, you know, I think that the weather and climate enterprise, the combination of both broadcasters, private sector meteorologists, researchers, private and federal meteorologists, we're all a part of an industry and an enterprise that all has a common goal and a common perspective on the field. Certified consulting meteorologists, they really play a valuable role as we are moving more into an era where meteorological information, atmospheric sciences data is critical, not just in our field and in the what I call weather weenie field. And I know you guys use that term as well. I proudly wear the hat. But we certainly see our data being used by energy companies, businesses of all type. And the CCM really certifies that this person knows what they're talking about. So when someone has our CCM or they have the CBM, they have been credentialed, they have gone through various testing. And so that client or the person that's utilizing that service knows that person is a meteorologist and has knows what they're talking about and has the credentials to prove it.
You talked about the weather and climate enterprise, and there's been a lot of movement, some discussion on that recently. Tell us a little bit about that, and this there's a commission on the weather and enterprise that's trying to gain a little bit of traction as well. What does that have to do with the AMS going forward and for meteorology in general here in the United States?
Well, let me say, yeah, there is something called the Weather Commission that's being promoted by various colleagues, and we also within the AMS have the Commission on the Weather Climate Enterprise, which is a separate activity. But the Weather Commission, really, that's an effort being led by several parts of the weather enterprise. And the whole notion is that we need stronger representation, higher visibility at the executive and legislative levels, meaning at the presidential level and within Congress. So what a commission does is it would be a 12 to 16 member commission appointed by the president and the leaders of Congress. And that commission would represent the best interests of the community, the weather community, on major issues, perhaps related to funding. Now the AMS, we're one of several sponsors of a meeting being held in Dallas, Texas in a week or so to further discuss the pros and cons and merits of a weather commission, because, you know, right now the AMS's official position is that we want to encourage this conversation. We think this conversation is one that needs to be had. And I think that as we saw in the Austin AMS meeting, the annual meeting back in January, I think there's still some pros and cons in some people's minds. And so this meeting in Dallas next week will flesh that out a bit more. And we put a little money on the table to co-sponsor that meeting to try to make sure that everyone in our enterprise understands it. So I would encourage your listeners, your viewers to, you know, become educated on the Weather Commission, because there's a lot at stake.
Now, one of the things that such a commission would no doubt talk about is the issue of climate change, and something that you've really championed, I think, in the first couple of months is not so much welcoming in, you know, people with opinions, but welcoming in perhaps folks with published scientific research that maybe doesn't quite toe the IPCC line in certain things, perhaps stuff that might eventually be incorporated in future IPCC reports if it's verified. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and your goals to potentially widen the discussion a little bit?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things I would say is I think that has always been there within the EMS, but I certainly know that there have been some challenges and some feelings that may have been out there that suggest that that's not the case. But talking to various folks that have been around, I think that that's been there. But one of the things I've really tried to do is really say, look, 14, 15,000 member organization, everyone's not going to agree, but let's all make the organization agreeable to everyone. We're all meteorologists. We're all enthusiasts of the atmospheric sciences. And so I want to make sure that anyone that's interested in weather, climate, atmospheric sciences related, feels like they have a home, feels like there's a voice within the AMS, even if everyone's not speaking the exact same viewpoint. Now, as you know, Nate, I am a big supporter of basing any opinions on the peer-reviewed literature and the science of the day. And I had lunch with John Christie and Judy Curry just recently. We're on a NASA advisory board, and we were in Washington, D.C., I'm sorry, breakfast. And I told John and Judy, I said, look, I would love to have you guys at the AMS. I know you haven't felt by some people, at least, that you're welcome there, but I think there are others that would welcome that. And in fact, we've floated in some discussions, a session at the next AMS meeting where we can explore all viewpoints. We even spun up a committee within the AMS called the CICCR. That's being led by Ray Band, formerly of the Weather Channel, and also Andrea Bleistein of the National Weather Service. And they have been exploring ways to promote an environment where all viewpoints can be expressed within the AMS, whether it be at a specialty conference or at the annual meeting. So, as you saw in some recent tweets and some things, I'm very open to any viewpoint as long as it's based on the science and it's presented with respect. As I told you, I have no interest in being in the climate wars. I have nothing at stake in this. I just want to know. Ding, I got you. Next question.
No. That's not the buzzer. Hey. Marshall, don't confuse the buzzer with the bell. The bell is a good thing.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Jack. I'm getting my weather brains initiation here. I've heard about the buzzer from Matt Daniel and some of my students.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal with the buzzer. And what you're saying is so refreshing, because most people that listen to this show have made up their mind on that issue. And sure. And that they believe firmly in you know what they believe to be correct. And it is a thing where it gets people in a rage, and it tends to split people up, and it's just a problem. So I would rather focus on issues here that bring people together instead of tearing them apart. But what you've just said is so refreshing, because there's no threat. There's no feeling of being unwelcome if you don't toe the line with a certain opinion.
Change their minds.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, Marshall. Yes,
we lost your whole thing. Right, we got about the first 10 seconds and then nothing.
Yeah, I noticed it says your network connection is experiencing difficulties. We have the weather here is atrocious. I mean, we're in the middle of a downpour. So, but I was just saying, Marshall, the reason we had that buzzer, I'm interested in the things that bring us together right now. And there's a lot, you know, you bring up climate and people, the veins start bulging out of their neck and they start pointing fingers and they start screaming and cussing and talking ugly to each other. And I don't like that. I want us to focus on the things that bring us together. And it sounds like you want to do the same thing. And I'm just not saying this because you're on the show. I've said this when you're not on the show. You're the greatest thing that's happened to the AMS in a long time. You're accessible. You don't threaten people. You want to bring people in and bring them together. So I just want to thank you for being a breath of fresh air. And to me, I'm invigorated. I love the AMS convention this year, and I can't wait to come to Atlanta. So thanks for what you've done to make a lot of us feel welcome, because I think there was an image where the AMS was perceived, it's just for academic people. You know, it's for those in academia. It's not for broadcasters. It's not for operational people. If you want to get involved, go to the NWA. But Marshall, I think you're really reaching out to all parts of the weather enterprise. And again, I'll just say that it's very, very refreshing.
Well, thanks, James. I think that's one of the things. We've seen this cycle several times. I know back when the NWA got started, I know the operational community really felt isolated and that the AMS was really this academic, highbrow, ivory tower institution. And I know that over time we've worked to try to remove that image. And I know, you know, I'm an academic, but I didn't come from academia. I didn't grow up, quote unquote, in academia. I spent 12 years of my career at NASA first. So I have a slightly different perspective. And I think being within NASA, we work with all of the aspects of the enterprise, and I think that's very important. And I, James, I agree with you. I, even if we do agree or disagree on aspects of weather or climate or whether things should be named storms or whatever the issue of the day is, I still just don't understand the vitriol and the anger and the emotion that's evoked mm-hmm. in this discussion. I mean, it's just not my personality. I'm not a confrontational person. I mean, even some of the things that you may have seen recently, it's just so sort of opposite to my personality. I mean, I want to try to bring people into the fold so that we can learn, because, you know, the fact that, you know, part of my community has their mind made up, or part of the listeners or viewers of this particular program have their mind made. I mean, in life, as I've learned, there's nothing that's entrenched on either side 100%. So how can we try to find those common ground and that common understanding? That's really where I come from.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead, Kev.
Just because he said something I thought was really interesting. He said he has seen this kind of cycle around this not this issue alone, but that issue and others. And I completely agree. I've watched over the years, I've been doing this kind of a cycle or a pendulum on things like climate, but also just on the seal of approval. Oh, it's too easy to get it, so we got to toughen it back up. And then the pendulum swings back. And then everybody gets mad because it's too hard and then it's too easy. My question, I guess, is there something that can be done to stop that pendulum swinging back and forth? Because I think you hit on a really important issue, Marshall.
Yeah, no, it's challenging. Just to give you a taste of where I sit, we're a 15,000 member organization, and I have people within the organization saying that we're not tough enough on a certain issue, and then I have others saying we're too vocal on an issue. The other aspect of that is, you know, right now there's a sense that we're losing the academic community and the researchers to other organizations, our peer organizations like the AGU. Now, our numbers don't bear that out quite as kept. The AMS is growing, and our membership is as healthy and as strong as ever. But that's because, as James alluded to, we have been opening our doors and our membership. I don't know if many of you guys remember, but there was a time when joining the AMS, you had to submit a transcript.
Mm-hmm. I had to do that.
Absolutely. And we still are not as open and sense as AGU, we're essentially a good peer organization that we are partners with, but it's a bit more of an open organization. You pay your dues and you're in. We do want to have some level of weather credentialing, but it's not, if you go and look at our membership capacity now, our requirements, it's not really nearly as stringent as it has been in the past. But to get back to that question, what can we do to kind of, there are these cycles. I mean, we have certain group, at any time when you start moving a certain way, we're broadening our doors, you're going to have some other group that reacts and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not the AMS I'm used to. A lot of people aren't used to an AMS president that tweets, but hey, I'm out there tweeting because that was one of the things that I really wanted to be accessible to the membership. I didn't want the membership to just see the AMS president speaking at a banquet one time a year or getting maybe one email saying to renew your dues.
And I love the fact, by the way, that when you tweet, it's not just, oh, here's a meeting or here's something I found. You've gotten in and had some pretty interesting and lengthy back and forth conversations with various folks, some people who agree with you, some people who don't, some people who are, you know, perhaps, less than charitable sometimes with their comments, but you've engaged them. And I love that about you, that you're jumping in and talking with folks, and heck, even talk with me on Twitter every now and again, which is cool too. It shows you how low you'll stay.
Well, I only talk to the cool people, Nate.
Checks in the mail.
I love the research triangle. I love that research triangle area too. I was just up there in EPA recently. In fact, I think you invited me out the next time I was in the area.
Yeah, please do. We have some good barbecue restaurants up this way. We'll have to show you North Carolina barbecue.
Oh, absolutely. When Florida State plays up that way, we'll get up that way. But yeah. No, I think that's right. Look, the bottom line is, you know, I'm not going to engage in sort of, you know, piddly conversation. I'm relatively new to the Twitter world, and just like picnics on a hot summer day, there are mosquitoes on Twitter too that kind of annoy you every now and then. But for the most part, I think that it's a healthy vehicle. It's a way I believe that we can bring all aspects of our community together. One of the things that James and others heard me say in Austin is that I want to bring in the younger fold of our community. That's why I'm really excited about the fact that our student conference at the AMS is growing every year. We had 600 students registered for our conference in Austin. We now have this year in Atlanta in 2014, we're going to have the second annual Early Career Professionals Conference at the Atlanta meeting. So we're trying to engage that, what I would say, 18 to 35 year old crowd, which really is sort of the future of our community, regardless of what sector of our community we're in. So, do we have challenges out there? Yes. But do we have opportunities out there as well? Yes. And so that's, I like to focus on the opportunities rather than the challenges. I mean, even in some of the things that you're talking about or alluding to, Nate, on Twitter, I mean, hopefully you saw that I was very open and inviting. I mean, people know the perspectives of certain people out there in the community on either side of this issue. I'm not a miracle worker, so I'm not, you're generally not going to change someone's opinion when it's entrenched on a position. But what you try to do is be agreeable and say, look, I'm open to hear you out. You know, I might be able to learn something from you that I can include in my next Senate testimony, as opposed to kind of going at it head to head. So that's kind of the perspective I come from. And I won't get into the weeds of the discussions in any format. But I think it's important that, because I'm informed on certain things that members in the community may not be. And I think it's important to share that and be engaged.
Now, let me ask you, you're talking about sort of involving the younger, say, 18 to 35 crowd, and now that's younger. Oh, God, I'm getting old. you talk about that, and one of the things that you had talked about was trying to get these folks engaged in the community, but also maybe having a wary eye for some things and just being careful. Can you elaborate a little more into that?
Yeah, and this may be something that you and I talked about offline, but one of the things that I think our younger colleagues and has to be a little bit careful about on formats like Twitter and Facebook and whatever else is out there. I think that, everyone knows everyone in this field. I'm in a position now where I know just about everyone is probably going to hire you somewhere in the community, whether it's at NASA, NWS. And I think there's some really talented young colleagues out there that are, just need to be a little bit careful about how they position themselves, some of the things they say, because those types of things can actually kind of follow you throughout your career. And you don't want to kind of, sort of pigeonhole yourself or stovepipe yourself based on your views and things that you're presenting on Twitter or Facebook. And that's just a caution that I have, because one of my big concerns, and I'll share this, is that I am a little concerned that we are becoming too much of a blog Twitter spheric society in terms of just scientific discourse. I think it's important to share this information and knowledge, but my son, who's 5 years old, bless his heart, I mean, he could go and write a blog and put it on the internet, and it doesn't necessarily mean what he's saying. You say, hey, Dad, I've been at something that can cure headaches. And if he signed it, Dr. Anderson Shepherd, there might be a few people that actually would buy it. But the point is, I think that we've got to kind of rein that in a little bit, because there are formats that, certainly the scientific meetings, the specialty meetings, even sort of just less formal formats that I think are useful for discourse on this topic. And let me just sort of say this. If any of your viewers or listeners have never been to an AMS meeting, particularly an annual meeting, you're just missing out on just a really community feel. You get to meet and hang out with people like James Spann. You get to actually hang out with people that wrote your textbook, that maybe has the name on a theory that you read in your Holton Dynamics book. Mm-hmm. So it's really just something that I think every person that's in the weathering community at some point should experience. And, we welcome it in Atlanta, my hometown, in 2014.
Looking forward to that. I know that's just down the road from us, and we'll have hopefully a large contingent from our shop and from NC State just across the road down there.
Absolutely.
At that. In terms of your personal research, I mean, you mentioned that you'd worked for NASA. You also have a PhD. You've done some research of your own. Can you talk a little bit about that? You've done some remote sensing type work.
Yeah, no, I it's interesting, because when people tell me, and you guys know this as well as anyone, when I tell people I have degrees in meteorology, it's usually two or three questions that I get right off the bat. What's the weather tomorrow? Can my daughter have their wedding next September?
When will you be on TV next?
Exactly. So But I mean, I've always kind of been more on the research and development side. In sixth grade, I did a science project. Can a sixth grader predict the weather? And so I made weather instruments and tried to figure out the weather in my little community in Canton, Georgia. And from that point, I always was more interested in the sort of how and why of the weather. And so I went in more into the research and development side. So I spent 12 years at NASA designing and working on weather satellite missions to measure precipitation, hurricanes, things like Superstorm Sandy, which I know you might want to chat about a little bit as well.
Got a little
viewpoint on that and some other things. But the tropical rainfall measuring mission was a mission that I worked closely on at NASA. There's a mission launching next year called the Global Precipitation Measurement Mission. I was the deputy project scientist for that mission that will be launching hopefully in February. And so these missions are advancing capability to improve not only our understanding of the weather and climate system, but also to improve weather prediction and other aspects of, for example, TRIM. It was designed to measure something esoteric like latent heat in the tropics to improve our understanding of rainfall. But it turns out that the Hurricane Center and forecasters down at the HRD, you look at TRIM data during the hurricane season to get fixes on storms because it has a microwave capability that can see through clouds. So that really is exciting to me. It was almost sort of highway robbery that I was getting paid to do major science experiments.
That's something I found that about most meteorologists, we're not in this, you know, to get paid. We're not in it because we're getting huge paychecks. We're in it because we love it. And the fact that somebody wants to pay us to do what we'd be doing anyway is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned Sandy. You opened the door, so we'll walk through it. A lot of folks, a lot of consternation, I think, around the decision to, one, to change, to drop the tropical warnings and to go with the coastal flood and high wind warnings north of North Carolina's state line with Virginia up the coast, but also the decision to classify it as a tropical storm and then classified as extratropical before it made landfall. We've now had the benefit not only active and fervent discussion in at the AMS annual meeting at the Sandy Town Hall just a couple of months ago, or about a month ago, but also we've had a chance to get the reanalysis from the National Hurricane Center and to get sort of the step back, let's take a scientific, you know, best state of the tropical science look at this. What are your thoughts on how that went down, and do you think the community was well served, perhaps not necessarily by the decision at the time, but by the conversation and the discourse we've had since then?
Yeah, no, I think that obviously we're all aware of sort of the discussion point, but the way I look at this is I think it's one of those opportunities to for lessons learned, and I think that many people have learned lessons, including our colleagues over at NOAA and National Weather Service about procedure and sort of minutiae of procedure and some of the things that were involved in that decision. As you may know, here at the University of Georgia, we actually have perhaps the only class of its kind ongoing right now at UGA, a class called Deconstructing Superstorm Sandy. And we're looking at all aspects of Sandy. And we've kind of dealt with that issue a little bit, looking at, you know, the Bob Hart phase diagrams that kind of talk about when a storm transitions from tropical or warm core phase to a middle latitude or a cold core system, getting its energy from differences in air masses versus the water or the ocean. And what we found, even in our class and some of the class discussions, is that there are mixed signals. But I know colleagues in your field say, well, whatever. So what? The scientific signals say it was tropical or not. I think the question in some of your colleagues' minds is, what is the public going to consume and react to? And so I think those kind of discussions have been very valuable in terms of understanding what are the types of criteria that we need. Because, for example, in the NOAA report, they talk about three criteria used to determine whether a storm is still tropical or not. And Sandy did not meet all of those criteria. So they made the decision to go with the sort of warning strategy that they use and decentralize to the various National Weather Service offices. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll let various others kind of debate in hindsight whether that was smart or not. But I think you're hitting on a point, Nate, which is I think we've learned lessons as a community from this. The other big thing that I'm concerned about on the other side is on the consumer end, the people consuming information. I think you've probably seen me blog and write about this. I think people are so fixated with the category of a hurricane that it's the impact of a storm that we really care about. So, for example, I did an interview after Sandy, and there was a woman in Lower Manhattan that said, well, my friend in Florida said if it wasn't a Category 2 storm, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But we all know that the impact of the storm is what is most dangerous. So I think this is also an opportunity to really ramp up our education of the public sector on what is dangerous about storms and kind of remove this fixation on Category 4, Category 5 storm. You know, I think about Tropical Storm Allison several years ago. That was a hazardous event, and I don't even think it ever became a hurricane. So if we can really start focusing more on impact-based warning as opposed to category warning, I think that would be a step forward.
And I know that's something that's been discussed extensively. And one of the things that, you know, we've done, I think, is a pretty good job as a community is after big events, the National Weather Service has taken the lead on at least one effort, the service assessment effort, to go and interview people and try and understand what exactly is going on in people's minds. It's a fairly new thing, but there's been quite a lot of it in the last few years. And then there was the big dust up with the assessment team this time around with Sandy. And as a result, the Weather Service had to go with an all federal team. Going forward, do you think that non-federal people have a role to play in those Weather Service assessments? Or is that something that perhaps we're asking those service assessments to do too much, and perhaps there needs to be additional funding for outside researchers from University of Georgia and other places to go into storm-hit areas and try and understand what people were thinking and whether or not the warning products were having the desired effect?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on that, but I think the National Academy of Sciences, as our colleague John Tui Morales often talked notes, has provided some guidance on this with a recommendation, perhaps, that there be external members of some of these assessment committees. I mean, I think the jury's still out. I think that we have to consider this carefully, but I think the National Academy of Sciences recommendations are worth noting and looking into. I look at every situation as being somewhat different, and so I think we have to kind of look at each situation on its own merits. I think it was Mike Smith, our colleague Mike Smith, one of the colleagues out there in the field that many of us know. I mean, I think he was talking about some interesting ideas at the AMS meeting in Austin that perhaps are worth thinking about or looking at. I think this is, again, one of those opportunities to bring together a group of experts, and perhaps this is the type of thing that a weather commission might think about or make recommendations on. But my point is, I think it's I'm not endorsing any particular approach at this point, and the AMS certainly doesn't have a particular position on this. But what I think we can say is that this is the time to have those conversations as opposed to kind of going back into our business as usual entrenchment.
So speaking of folks breaking with business as usual, the Weather Channel decided they wanted to name winter storms this winter season, and that has met with quite a bit of criticism, including here on this program, but not exclusively. There have been some folks that have argued in favor of it. I think my biggest beef wasn't that they did it, because they certainly have a right. They're a private enterprise. They have to make money for their shareholders in order to stay in business, and I get that. I think my biggest beef was with perhaps how it was done in terms of working with other partners in a coordinated effort. Do you have any thoughts on that and how we can – a lot of folks still will not use the names. I know in our shop, so long as the Weather Channel's behind it, we're not using them. We're pretty much going to wait for the Weather Service to take the lead on that. Do you have any thoughts on how we as a community can move forward and, quite frankly, heal the relationship a little bit and then move forward into something that works for everybody, assuming that the naming shows to have some value, which we're still waiting on data for?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, again, this is one of those where I've been asked this before, and we've actually received emails at the AMS saying, what is your official position on the Weather Channel naming storms? And we don't have a position on that. So I don't want to put forth one here, but I would say from an ideal perspective, there are some decisions that probably do require some sort of community thought and input in terms of both understanding the physical and social science basis for decisions. And so you mentioned this earlier in your comments when you talked about the sort of dust up after Sandy and the whole warning. The AMS provided a format at that town hall to kind of get some of this stuff out in the open and air it out a bit. And that's one of the key sort of assets, I think, of an organization like the AMS, is that it provides sort of a nonpartisan sort of, we're not sort of supportive of any particular industry or member of our community, but a format to kind of discuss these. Because, you know, ideally, I think that you want to think about the sort of, you know, their decisions that are based on sort of private or corporate interest, and that's certainly within the purview of any given private organization. But in some cases, there are some decisions that cross boundaries beyond just what's happening within that sort of private industry or that corporation. Now, again, I'm not going to weigh in specifically on whether I think the Weather Channel is wrong or right on that. But I think in similar situations, I think I would have personally, not taking off AMS hat, but just wearing my personal hat as a member of the community, that probably as an activity that might require sort of a broader discussion in the future if we were to see similar things like that. But I think the jury's still out. I think there's some people that have really strong opinions on this storm naming. My big concern, however, and this is something that was received in an email that we received at the AMS, is that people are becoming confused because there are different names out there for the storms now, because as you noted, people aren't using and don't have to use, and I frankly don't use any particular organization's name for the storms either, or try not to, but I think we're finding that the public, who doesn't understand the sort of sausage making of our community, they don't know what's official and what's not, and they say, okay, I thought the storm was storm P or storm whatever, and someone else is calling it this, and that could create a hazard for life and property if you have people confused about what's happening. So,
Marshall, you said, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you said that the AMS has not taken a position on that. Do you envision that they might, especially if data comes in and suggests that it's causing a problem, like the confusion that you were just referencing?
No, I think what the AMS would do is we'll always be an honest broker for discussion on this topic and in facilitating it. You know, the Weather Channel is a valued member of our enterprise, as are your own individual enterprises and stations. And so, you know, I as an honest broker, I personally feel that it's not in our interest to kind of, you know, single out any particular member of our community, because and so that's why we, you know, there are a lot of things that we could take stands on, but I think it would be, you know, not in the best interest for the role we try to play as an honest stakeholder and as an integrator and a communicating facilitator of our community. So, but I think if the data comes out and comes forth, I mean, I think our conferences, I think our bulletin of the AMS and our journals, I think they are welcome formats for having the discussion. And I think that's where we should have the discussion, as we've done with Sandy, as we'll continue to do with Sandy in the 2014 meeting, where we're going to have a more broad inclusive conference on Sandy. And I think that's the role the AMS should play.
And speaking about the winter storms, I've seen a sneak peek of at least part of the program for the Broadcast Meteorology Conference and the second conference on weather warning and communication that'll be in Nashville in late June. Yep. And there will be a significant chunk of time actually dedicated to a discussion of the naming of winter storms. And it's my understanding that a couple of folks on Weather Channel have been invited, and at least one of them will be at the meeting. We're still, I'm not directly involved with planning that part of it, but I do know that they're working with a couple of Weather Channel folks to get them involved and try and get as much hard data and good solid theory behind that, to bring that to that discussion. I think to your point about, you know, this becoming sort of a blog-driven atmosphere as opposed to a data-driven atmosphere, there's a lot of that, I think, especially on the social science side of that. A lot of people have opinions. They have certain experience, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you can bring actual research data and peer review data and results and conclusions to bear, that can be a really good thing. And I think the more of that we get, both with Sandy and the warning issue and with naming winter storms and some of these other things, the better I think we're all going to be, and the better decisions we'll make as a community going forward.
Yeah, I just had a slight wind blowing outside my window. I just named it, by the way. But a bit more serious. On a serious note, I actually do have a I actually am planning to be at that meeting in Nashville. As AMS president, I'm trying to get around to some of the special. One of the interesting things, and I think actually at times it bothers me a little bit about AMS, but it's just the way we do business, is we have specialty meetings in addition to our annual meeting. So you'll have the broadcasters meeting, or you'll have the satellite conference or the hurricane conference. And so these are more focused meetings, but one of the things I like about the annual meeting is it really brings the community together as a whole. And so oftentimes the broadcasters, because of the timing of the year, the annual meeting, and particularly in 2014, I understand it's during sweeps week, because it's, our meeting is the 2nd through the 7th of February in 2014. But I try to get around to some of these meetings. And so I think that's going to be important. I think I'm actually speaking at the broadcast meeting this year on some of my urban climate work. So.
Excellent. And if you're not, I'm chairing the other meeting that's going on at that time. I'm sure we can fix that. So,
I know I'm going to be there, and I think I do have some role. So,
Marshall, can you hang on here for a few minutes? Or do you have to go right now?
No, I'm good.
Oh, good. Yeah, we need to take a quick break. We're going to do Professor Peters and Weather Brains 101, and we've got to do some email, and we are going to do picks of the week, Marshall. So fair warning, we'll ask you for a pick of the week, anything weather-related, website, hardware, software, instruments, anything like that. So, but for now, we're going to take a quick break for Professor Peters. We'll come back with the weather roundup, the picks of the week, and much more as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
Dual polarization radars really shine when it comes to detection of heavy rain. KDP, or differential phase shift, is superior for detecting areas of heavy rainfall and the resulting rain rate and accumulation, since dual polarization collects more and better information on drop characteristics. Hail is generally a non-factor in KDP in most situations because hail contamination is no longer the problem it used to be. Better estimations also result from a better understanding of what types of rain processes are occurring. Tropical rainfall is a much different situation in terms of rain rates and amounts than continental rainfall. While meteorologists try to account for this by changing the ZR relationship of the radar for different events, it doesn't always work well. Dual polarization will do this much better and automatically, so estimations of rain will be much better. In general, heavy rain occurs with KDP values greater than 1. As KDP values further increase, rain rates increase too. Extreme KDP, that is, values greater than about 5, can be an indication of small water-coated hail. A KDP value of 0.2 converts to about a half inch per hour. 1.2 is about 2 inches per hour, and 2.8 around 4 inches per hour, and so forth. With a new rain estimation capability will come new rainfall products. 1 hour and storm total estimates are the most prevalent with the conventional Doppler radar. However, dual polarization radars will see a true instantaneous rain rate product. There will also be some difference products for comparison between standard and dual polarization versions. All is not completely sunny, though. The big drawback in KDP comes when the radar detects non-weather-related echoes, because KDP is not computed at all. This will create blank areas in the product, and sometimes KDP will not compute for legitimate precipitation. This is not a frequent occurrence, but when this happens, the dual polarization rainfall products will suffer. This is the primary reason for keeping those standard products. Research is ongoing by the National Weather Service in the hopes of fixing this issue in future software updates. And next week, we'll move on to a look at hail in a dual polarization world.
We should mention Bill Murray is not on the show this week, so we're not going to have This Week in Weather History, although he just showed up. Speak of the devil. I mean, I just said he's not on the show, and now he's on the show. So, Bill, are you there? He's working on getting his microphone hooked up. But anyway, we don't have a This Week in Weather History. We've already done the weather, look at the national weather. We talked about that at the start of the show. So I thought what we would do at this point is to jump right into that email inbox. Because I would imagine the email officer has something to say to us here.
And James, do you have the breaking news from our friend in Estonia?
Yes. You want to play that right now?
This warrants the breaking news alert as well.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
Hello, weather brains. This time I have some breaking weather news. Sort of. My heart sank today as I was listening to the radio on my way home from school and the news came on. The Ministry of Environment is intending to merge Estonian Meteorological and Hydrological Institute and Environment Information Center. Effective the 1st of May this year, yes, this year. The EMHI's name, something I regard synonymous with weather, probably like you regard the National Weather Service, well, that name will be history. I've gotten an impression from the media coverage that this is sort of happening in a rushed manner. Just last year they moved out from their building at Tombuieste in Tallinn, a place that was, by the way, very easily reachable by train, to a new building. Nonetheless, it appears this is going to be happening with a pretty rushed manner, like we merge first, then we think how to improve things. They intend to have the new organization based on the previous two up and running by 1st of May this year. I really have a bad feeling about this, and I will keep you posted. From Laguja, Estonia, this was Tarmo Danilso.
So we've had a report from our West Texas Bureau and now our Estonian Bureau. I love this. It's very multicultural edition of Weather Brains.
Essentially, all over right here.
That's right. Essentially, they're combining the Estonian version of the Weather Service. They're moving it around and combining it with another organization. And the fear is that it might lose its identity. And potentially, if it's anything like here, you lose your identity, you lose your funding. So that's something we'll be keeping our eyes on.
I think it's funny that two of the most far-flung cultures you can think of are Estonia and West Texas.
That's right. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. So a listener survey response. We appreciate these. If you listen to the program, let us know what you think of the program. Go to weatherbrains.com. You don't have to scroll down too far there. You'll see a picture of a gal who looks like she's enjoying the program way too much. You know, that's a stock photo because nobody enjoys this that much. But she's from Huntsville. This is from Catherine. And she found out about the program from James's Twitter feed. And she likes the detailed physics. Let's see. She wants more, a detailed physics explanations of the mesoscale level fluid dynamics that cause severe weather, such as gravity waves and the relationship between fronts and parcel buoyancy. I love that. That's good stuff. We love
that. We need to get Tarmo on that.
Yes. So, anyway, potentially a Weather Brains 101. And as a matter of fact, while we're thinking of future Weather Brains 101 topics, Brian, one, a question for the professor. Can you please explain the term short-range ensemble mean?
No.
How the word ensemble, and this is from Gara, sounds like a clothing outfit or musical group, got into the phrase, and what we get out of that and what the mean there. So that's from MSWX Chick. We had a nice conversation about her a couple of weeks ago because I called her a guy, and I'm still sorry for that. I'm trying to switch. It's what you do when you try to figure out pronouns based on Twitter handles. So anyway, a potential 101 theme. Essentially, in short, though, the ensemble is a set of computer models. Usually it's one model, but in some cases it's multiple models where different parts of the model have been tweaked, and then we run them out into the future. And if all of the model solutions are very close together, then that gives us confidence that the model is onto something and that the future is perhaps predictable. On the other hand, if you have run out that ensemble and you wind up getting a large spread of answers, and say model saying the high is going to be anywhere from 30 to 90, then that maybe is a clue that the future, at least from where you sit, may not be quite as easily predicted, and that may give you pause in picking any one particular model, giving you too much confidence in that. So it's something to the state of the meteorological science is really pushing toward using ensembles, and I'm really happy to say that one of my colleagues, Greg Fischel here at WRAL, has really been pushing the broadcast community on that, and we're doing some really cool stuff. We spend a lot of time every day trying to figure out how we can not only use the ensembles to come up with a better forecast, but how we can show that and share that with the public and talk with people about that. So, as a matter of fact, I think he's going to be presenting at the broadcast conference about that coming up later on in June. We also had an email from Michael Potts, a YouTube clip of Doppler Tim Hedrick's My Weather Valentine. He's in WKRC, not KRP, in Cincinnati, WKRC. And very interesting Valentine's Day forecast. We'll put a link up on weatherbrains.com for that. And with that, I'm out of email. Send me some email. Email at weatherbrains.com. Tweet us. Find us on Facebook. Whatever.
All right. So here's what's going to happen now. I'm going to start off the picks of the week, and I'm going to have to run, do some television here. And Kevin, you know, when I'm gone, Kevin takes over this show. I'm going to turn the floor.
Now, it used to be that Kevin did it because he was the email officer, but now he's not the email officer.
He's the host officer when the host guy has to go do television officer. So
you should see my business card. It says exactly that on it.
It really does. It's a big card to it. We're going to do picks of the week. This is where we go around the table and share something that's weather related. Mine is a fairly new product that the SPC is offering called the SPC Storm Scale Ensemble of Opportunity. Doesn't that sound fun? Have you guys tried this yet?
Nope.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I've looked at it, and they're taking all of the different model data sets that they can get, and they're sort of rolling their own ensemble together, right?
They're making their own ensemble out of all of their higher resolution numerical models they run there. These are the, you know, convection allowing models, and it's really interesting. For people that love storms and love to look at storm environment, and we're almost into spring tornado season for a lot of us, that's just a fun product. So that is my pick of the week. And having said that, I've got to go deal with a gravity wave wake low. Don't you guys love those?
Oh, nice.
Those are really interesting critters, and it looks like we've got one on the back edge of a stable rain mass about to move into the Birmingham metro. So, and the fact that the news is about to come on here. So, Kevin, the floor is yours. My chair will be empty for a short while.
All right. Great. Good luck on TV.
Thank you.
Oh, Bill's here now. Bill, did you get your mic working?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Kevin?
Yes. You're a little echoey, but I don't know what mic you're on. Are you on a stick mic or?
I'm sitting in a hospital room tonight, Kevin.
Oh, my goodness. Is everything okay?
Yeah. Sally had some surgery today, so we're hanging out for her recuperation here.
Is she doing well?
She's doing very well.
I know that the entire Weather Brains audience will lift up a little prayer for her speedy recovery then.
Well, thank you very much.
Do you want to do, you've obviously been busy. James was trying to get you to do a This Week in Weather History. Do you want to do that or you want to put that off?
Well, what I want to trade is for an endorsement, and it'd be my pick for tonight, which is our new Central Alabama rejuvenated National Weather Association chapter that we are working very hard on. Our goal is to have 100 members by the summer, and we're really opening it up to the weather enthusiast community to come and join the broadcasters and the National Weather Service meteorologists and the emergency managers, and to make this one of the leading chapters in the country. And so we'd like to invite everyone who's in Central Alabama who hears this tonight to be at our first meeting, which is actually 2 weeks from tonight at Vulcan Park in Birmingham. We'll have a dual pole class with the Science and Operations Officer from the National Weather Service in Birmingham, Kevin Laws, and we're going to have two other big meetings during the year. We'll have one in Montgomery, and we'll also have a couple of social events. and a community outreach event. But I think it's going to be a very exciting year, and we're looking for everyone to come out and get involved. And I sent over to Brian, and Brian, if you don't mind posting those, a link to the member portal for the association, and also the new Twitter feed. We'd love to have everybody follow us. We'll keep up with a couple of posts today about Central Alabama weather history, as well as some folklore, and any activities and events and interesting weather that are happening in our part of the state. So, again, $25, it's the best investment you'll have in weather. And come out and have a fun time, network, learn, and get involved with the weather in Central Alabama.
That's great. What a wonderful pick of the week. Very good, Bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you for allowing me to come on. I will sign out. Y'all have a great rest of the show.
Okay. Do you want, you know what, though, Bill?
Yes,
can you stay, or do you have responsibilities there in the room?
Because I think we're good. I'll be glad to stay.
Well, I was going to bring up if we had more time with Marshall, and he dropped out, but I think he's back now. Marshall, are you still there?
I am here, yes.
Great. Well, let's finish the picks of the week. Bill, if you got to go, I understand, but I was going to try and talk with Marshall a little bit more about something that involves you as well. But let's go down the row and do Brian. You have a pick of the week, Brian?
I do. In light of the blizzard that has gone on in the West Texas area and the Texas Panhandle, I actually saw on my Google Plus feed, I saw somebody posted an interesting blizzard. It's actually on YouTube, so I'll post a link to that. It's quite interesting to see a guy take his video camera and walk out into the middle of it.
Oh, neat. Okay, very good. Nate, you want to do a pick of the week?
No. But I'll do one anyway. I'm just kidding. I got an email through my work email, and I wanted to share this around. I know we got a lot of folks listening, and this is a research project being conducted through the School of Meteorology at OU. There are three undergrads working on this, and it's asking about the viewer perception of TV coverage during severe weather. And they have looking for three things in their survey. They're asking about the public understanding of the terms watch versus warning. We know there have been some issues with that. The relationship between broadcast meteorologists and the viewing public, and then maybe evaluating some of the language. And they have a link that they want to send people to. They want to distribute this and get the public, so viewers, not just TV broadcast meteorologists, but actually get non-meteorologists and other folks to take this survey. You go to www.stormsurvey.org, and just fill that out, and don't have to, it's not hung on any particular event or anything like that, but take a look at that, post it on Facebook, and let's try and get these folks some, the bigger data set they have to mine, I think the better the results they're going to be able to come up with, and I'm looking forward to seeing this hopefully published at some point in the not terribly distant future.
Awesome. Very good. Thank you, Nate. I'm going to do two. One is not weather related, but it's kind of, in a way, industry related, and one will be weather related. The first one is a website called Jobster, and it's one of those Flickr style spellings. It's Jobstr. And I got a note from one of the founders. His name is, I'm going to butcher his last name, and Frank, I'm sorry about this, but his last name is Hajdu. Who wants to try and pronounce that?
Hajdu.
Frank, we love you. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Frank. But anyway, he sent me a nice note. And what Jobster is a job, it's a Q&A site. You can start your own little section of this thing, or you can go in and look at other people's jobs. But anybody can get in, and you can ask people who do various jobs any question that you want. And he sent me a note, and he said, you know, we're up in New York, and after Sandy and the big winter storm, which interestingly he referred to as Nemo, which maybe we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. But he asked me, he said, we've never had a meteorologist on here. Would you be interested in doing that? And I said, yeah, it'd be great. And I've had a lot of fun with it the last couple of days. I've had, I think, 14 questions now. But what I really like about it is it's informational. It's very broad, wide-ranging. You know, you guys know that show, what's the Mike Rowe show? Dirty Jobs, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I love about that show that Mike Rowe does, and I think Frank and Jobster do this too, is they're just a great equalizer. Mike Rowe treats everybody, no matter what their job is, with a great deal of respect. And I think this thing does the same thing. The job that's on the top of the list right now is toll collector. And the guy's got 42 different questions answered. I've only got 14. Now, I don't know how long he's been on there, but all kinds of jobs are on there. And if you have a cool job, I think it's neat to go in there. You just click on the link that says, what do you do? And you can put in your job, and you have to go through a quick approval process. Doesn't take very long. But I just wanted to give Frank a shout out for Jobster, J-O-B-S-T-R. And I hope everybody, because I know everybody that listens to this program has one job or another, and I would love to see people's jobs in there, and I think it's kind of a neat site.
It's a good thing your top guy isn't a toll collector in the state of North Carolina, because even though we have toll roads, they're all electronically tolled, and so there are no toll collectors.
Very good. Well, you know, he may have
an interesting question. Yeah,
he may have addressed that. So there's some really fascinating things. Some of the things that are on there, there's recruiter, bartender right now is at the top, Python breeder, if you can believe that.
You say Python, I don't jump to the snake. I guess that's how much of a computer geek I am. I jump straight to the computing language.
One of the ones that Matthew got real excited about was there's apparently an official job called a video game reviewer. And that guy had a bunch of questions on his site anyway. So thanks to Frank for that. My weather-related pick is, since Christmas time, I've had this Nexus 7 tablet, which I really like. But a couple of days ago, the Weather Channel came out with an update to their app. And two really important things happen. And I give the credit, you know, we've given the Weather Channel a bunch of static, but from a marketing standpoint and a development standpoint, I'm really wanting to give them a shout out on this. Now, when the app first came out a couple of days ago, and tonight I have noticed that it's not doing this, but you have your weather information, and usually what we see on these apps, especially from the national players, is some sort of a big, beautiful picture. You know, it's a picture of a sunny sky or clouds or some waves or whatever it is. But they did something really interesting. And I think it was a very interesting answer to the how do we monetize mobile question, because the background on all of the current conditions images was an advertisement, a full screen advertisement, and Toyota took the advertisement spot, and that flight must have ended, but I think that was really important, something to watch. The other interesting thing they did is you look at it and you get current conditions, and I'm looking at Arlington, Texas right now. You can expand the little bubble and get winds and dew point and all that kind of stuff. But it says 41 degrees, mostly cloudy, feels like 32 degrees. And under that, this is very important, it says dry conditions will continue. Now, what they're doing on this, and I did it a couple of days ago when I downloaded, there was rain in Texas, and they're doing automated, what I guess I would call real-time text-enhanced forecasts. I'll give you one example. I was looking at a line of storms heading toward Houston, and there's a little town just north of Houston called Conroe, Texas, and the line of storms was just a few minutes to the northwest of Conroe, and that line above the current, or below the current conditions on the app said rain in 10 minutes in Conroe, and that was not a human-generated thing, because it was doing it all, I don't think, doing it all around the country. This is really important for the broadcasters. Now, was the thing wrong sometimes? Yeah, it was wrong in some cases. In Arlington the other day, it said dry conditions will continue, and there was rain probably 15 to 20 minutes west of me heading east. But this is a version one. It's going to get better. And think about the majority of users. They're on a phone. They're on a tablet. They basically, what it comes down to in my mind, is they're looking to replace you. And in some ways, they're going to do it.
This goes back, well, two things. Number one, it reminds me of the Dark Skies app.
Right.
That we've talked about here, where they're doing very, very short-term predictions based on radar and current trends and that sort of thing. Something that, you know, had been, you know, in the product development pipeline since the 90s. I know Baron Services and a couple of them licensed some technology from MIT where they were doing some graphic analysis of radar data and
And this app has that too. I just want to interrupt you, but go on.
No doubt. But it also goes back to the idea, and you know, we've had a number of meetings just in the last couple of weeks, you know, where I work, about how broadcast meteorologists, if all you're doing is just going over the forecast, then you are basically a sitting duck to be replaced. On the other hand, we as broadcasters need to be adding value. That needs to be at the top of the list. What story can I tell, and how can I use it to add value to the weather data that's been out on the web all day?
Right.
You know, and I mean, and it's something that newsrooms are having to deal with. You know, by the time somebody sits home and sits down and tunes in the 6 o'clock news, it's very rare that they don't already have some idea of most of the stuff you're going to cover. You have to find some way to add value beyond what you can do on the web and whatnot. And that's something that, you know, each medium has an advantage to it, has disadvantages, and you have to play to that strength. And that's one thing that broadcast meteorologists still can do. We can still tell stories. We can add value. We can explain things. We can get into some of the, you know, the details without, you know, blowing people out with details they don't need. But it's all about adding value. If you can't do that, then you are going to be replaced by an app that can look at radar data and say it's going to rain in 10 minutes.
Yeah. I thought this thing was really interesting. So that's my second pick of the week. If you have an Android device, and if you don't, I really am happy with this Nexus 7. It's only $200, I think, for the 8 gigabyte version, but it's well worth looking at.
And by Marshall, the way, Kevin, before we go to Marshall's pick, I want you to turn and face your camera for a second.
Yes.
Okay. There you go. So GS Davo 1975 on Twitter, he's asking what your full face looks like. He's wondering why it is that you never face your camera. And he said, I really want to see his full face. And I told him, no, you don't. But he insists. So there you go.
No, there's a technical reason for it. The computer and what everybody who's watching is looking at is I kind of have a side shot of me, whereas everybody else is looking at their computer. But I've got a separate camera, and the PC, the tower that I'm using, is behind the set, part of the set that I'm sitting on. And the simple answer is that it's not long enough for me to get it on top of the computer where I could look right into it. So that's Yeah, that's the
ask and you shall receive.
And you shall receive. All right. Well, back to Marshall. Thank you so much, Marshall, for sticking through all the other features here. We appreciate that. Do you have a pick of the week you wanted to share with us first?
Yeah, actually I do. I mean, I would share the NASA's Precipitation Measurement Missions website, pmm.nasa.gov. They've got a really interesting webinar and partnership going on right now with COCORAS, talking about how to utilize some of the rain gauge data from COCORAS and some other things in partnership with helping to be citizen scientists and help validate some of the NASA satellite missions. And then I would also ask you to Google deconstructing Superstorm Sandy if you want to follow my class's blogs on our that we're doing throughout the semester on Superstorm Sandy in the class at the University of Georgia graduate class. Shout out to all the members of that class.
I've been following that, and that is fascinating reading. I appreciate the fact that you're doing the class, number one, and number two, that you're making some of the output available. It's really educational.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. I mean, as my approach to AMS, like my approach to everything in class, is trying to do things a bit differently, out of the box, just to kind of make things more accessible. And so that's what we're trying to do with that class.
Those are great. So again, the paths are pmm.nasa.gov, or do a search for Deconstructing Sandy.
Deconstructing, yeah. And actually, I'm online now, so I'm actually going to try to find it while you're talking here.
Okay.
I've got
it.
Great.
Yeah, it's deconstructingsuperstormsandy.blogspot.com.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Good. Well, I'm glad that Bill came in, because we were talking a little earlier, Bill, about we talked about a wide range of things, but one of the topics we kind of skirted around seals and approvals and things like that. And we talked very briefly on this show a couple of weeks ago about a growing movement on the NWA to create some sort of a digital seal of approval. And I'm glad you're here to discuss that and wanted to get Marshall's opinion on what types of things we may be or may not be seeing from the AMS with regard to digital weather information, blogs and things like that. Is there anything afoot?
Who is that to?
That's to you, Marshall. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I think there have been some preliminary sort of chatter about that, but I will be candid to say that we're not close to anything on that. But I think the reality is, as we are in an era of digital content, digital media, we've been having discussions about an array of things, whether it be how to certify information on the web to even in our award structure. As you know, at AMS, we give awards. James Spann just got the Outstanding Broadcaster Award this past year, but we're exploring and having discussions about whether we need to have awards that recognize outstanding content in digital formats. So I think these are forthcoming discussions. Candidly, we're not that mature on that discussion. I know the NWA is having some discussions. I'm actually planning to go to the NWA meeting in Charleston this year and hope to kind of gain some insight and ways that we can kind of even bring the our two organizations together a bit closer and, perhaps collaborate on some issues like that one, for example, because I think that's one where we're going to have to deal with this issue at some point. We're going to have to get our hands around the sort of content's exploding in digital format. And right now there's probably more garbage out there than incredible information. And so we need some way to certify digital information.
I have a question along those lines, actually, something that's come up a couple of times. There seem to be two camps developing around this. One camp is don't post anything that's not your forecast or not something that you would back up or endorse. And another camp that says, the model data are out there and people are looking at the 300-hour GFS or whatnot, and they're seeing what they're seeing and they're posting on your Facebook page and asking questions about it. For you, Marshall, and for anybody here in the room, do we have any guidance on that? I mean, is that a good thing that we're posting, such things, that far out? Is there some value to that, or is that something that perhaps we should, not necessarily hide, but, maybe acknowledge, but not necessarily put out? Because what I've noticed is when those get posted on, public-facing Facebook pages, and usually they're tagged as such, this is a model forecast, this is not what I necessarily expect to happen, but those get shared a lot. Yep. And I don't know that sometimes they may not be shared with all of the context that the folks posting them. And I'm not trying to call anybody out. I'm really genuinely curious. Is that something that the community sees value in? And should we try and find a way to do that better or not?
Yeah, I think these are questions that even as we speak here, I'm taking some notes down to share with your good colleague and my good colleague, Jay Trobeck, here in AMS, because he's the chair of our Professional Affairs Commission. And I think these are all issues that I think we need to ramp up discussion on. As I said, I know that there has been some discussion, but I think these are things that rather than kind of weigh in too strongly on those right now, I think that we need to have a bit more of a discussion, because you're right, Nate. I see a lot of that too, sort of this putting stuff out there, and if it's provocative, it's going to get shared or retweeted right away, and it may not necessarily represent what the original tweeter or poster was intending there by putting it up there. They may have been putting it up there more in an informational capacity. In fact, we prevented one of our students in our Sandy blog from putting up some information from a private company, a long-term model forecast, because we didn't want any issues, frankly, with it in terms of its use or how we were using it. But I think we are in new territory here on that topic. So kudos to you guys for kind of raising these issues and kind of exposing them. By the way, quick aside there, yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter, by the way, I'm at Dr. Shepherd 2013.
Well, I'm really interested in this topic, because I think it's going to be next to impossible to control or reel this in. This is a discussion that's been going on in the broadcast world and the journalism world for a while now. And the fundamental point is that everybody is a broadcaster now. You don't have to have a television antenna or a giant printing press to do a newspaper in order to get your message out to the world. Now, in the old days of the SEALs from AMS or NWA, there was some regulation with regard to that, and a SEAL holder in a television station gained some particular promotional value from having SEALs. But if somebody wants to be putting out weather information, they're not beholden in any way to the parent organizations, and they don't need anybody's permission to put this kind of stuff out. They can go ahead and go on and do it, and quite frankly, I would think in some cases aren't going to care whether or not there's a seal. But Bill's gotten into this issue a little bit, and I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, Kevin, I was approached by Miles Muzio, who's the chair of the broadcast committee with the NWA. And, of course, he was aware of the active blogging that we do. We have, of course, a very successful blog, AlabamaWX.com, that, you know, averages around 1 million page views a month and carries a tremendous amount of, you know, good meteorology on it. And so he asked me to chair a subcommittee, which will develop a set of credentials similar to what the broadcast seal is about, you know, a set of guidelines, behaviors, et cetera. And so, you know, what I'll be working on over the next few weeks is to work a draft of that to present to the NWA Council to see, you know, how that would work, what it would look like. And, you know, I've already reached out to Nate. Kevin, I'll be reaching out to you. You know, I've already reached out to Brad Panovich, and, you know, I'll be talking to lots of other folks who are creating digital, you know, weather content all over the web and, you know, in different formats and, you know, taking that back, sort of a, you know, a people's look at what that would be. So, you know, I'll be talking to you, Kevin, soon. And we'll get you to join the NWA, too, Kevin, and, you know, put you on that committee.
And that's an area also where I mean, I know some of the same, like I said, that would be a great area where, if possible, to perhaps collaborate. And, you know, I think I can work that at the highest levels in NWA. But, you know, certainly Jay Trobeck and his chair of the broadcast committee within the AMS. I mean, this is one of those areas where I think it's of mutual concern and interest to the broader community. So I definitely applaud NWA for kind of taking the lead on this. Again, NWA is probably a bit out in front on this particular issue. I think I've heard rumblings of it, but nothing concrete. And I want to find out more about where AMS is on this with Jay Trobeck. So I certainly hope that we can find some ways to, you know, collaborate on this issue, because I think it is an emerging and critical issue, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just to play devil's advocate for a minute. You know, there are a lot of people in the journalism and that, you know, huffed and puffed and said, you know, bloggers, oh, we can't have bloggers doing that. You know, they have no credibility. But the bloggers, in the end of it, didn't care. They moved ahead.
Yeah.
And again, the promotional value that came from a seal for a television station was one thing. And there was some level of, you know, threat to a person's seal if they were not acting, you know, properly. But I wonder if that even matters in the digital world for people who are producing content in that area. So it'll be a really interesting discussion to see where that goes.
Absolutely.
All right. I guess we did everybody's pick of the week, right? Is there any other new business that we have? Bill, you want to tease programs coming up? Anything like that?
Yeah, I need to do that, Kevin. That's a good question. Talk to someone else for a second, and I'll pull up my guest list, and we'll talk about that.
All right. We'll wait on that for just a minute. I guess we can plug our usual things, like we usually do this program on Monday evenings at 8:30.
Oh, by the way, I have something I want to throw in,
news.
Kevin.
Okay.
Well, just the I know you're big into the tech stuff, as yeah. I am, and yeah. For those interested, there's a service very similar to Twitter called app.net.
Yes.
It's a paid, you have to, you know, pay to have an account until today.
Saw that.
They have now switched to they're offering a freemium level of service. It's very limited. The free accounts, you're only able to follow, I think, 40 people. You're very limited in terms of the amount of storage for pictures and things like that. And you have to have an invite. So you have to have somebody on the inside with a paid account who's willing to drop you an invite. But I was lucky enough to swing one of those today, and I'm looking forward to playing around in that space. Hopefully have something to report here in the next couple of weeks. But so far, I popped on, and no sooner had I been on than I had three or four people that I have never heard of before welcoming me to the service. And, you know, it was really kind of a neat experience. So far, so good.
Another social network to manage. Yay.
That's right. But it seems to be a little different. You know, one of the first things that somebody said was the promotional vibe over there doesn't quite seem to be there. It seems to be more, I don't say pure, but there's a lot of, you know, promoting. You know, Twitter exists to a certain extent to put information out, but also to promote yourself as a provider of information.
Right.
And there doesn't seem to be, at least just from my initial look today, and I really haven't had a chance to look, but there's not quite as much of that so far in my observing at app.net as you would see on Twitter. But we'll see how that plays out. And of course, imagine, you know, adding a number of freemium folks such as myself who were frankly just too cheap to pay for anything at all. You know, to have that, to be able to get in and to see if that changes the dynamic. Hopefully I won't change it all that much, but, you know, another 100 or 200 or 300,000 people like me probably will. And probably not for the better either, but we'll try and keep it clean.
All right. Very good. Bill, did you find your list of folks coming up?
Yeah, Kevin, thank you. We'll reschedule Jay Prater, who was scheduled to be on tonight with Dr. Shepard. He was a little busy tonight in Wichita, of course. Jay's a good friend. Was in Birmingham.
Snow schmo.
Exactly, but Jay will be back. We'll put him in the hot seat next time since he you know, was AWOL tonight. Now, the next 3 weeks will be on Tuesday nights because of James's baseball schedule. Dave Carroll from Virginia Tech was a listener suggested guest. We'll be talking about the meteorology program at Virginia Tech with Dave and with his department head. Also on the 12th now, children's book author Steve Lenore will join us. Chuck Doswell, the famous Chuck Doswell, Tuesday, March 19th. Greg Nordstrom will join us on the 25th. Then we get into some folks like Glenn Schwartz and Julie Crockett from BYU and George Winterling and Don Day and a program that we scheduled back a few weeks ago for Nate, the Ping folks, the precipitation near the ground, the precipitation identification near the ground program. And then a guest that we just added, Thomas Slatter. You know him from WeatherWise. He writes the great question and answer column in that magazine that we all love. He'll join us on May 20th as we look forward to all those appearances on WeatherBrains.
Boy, there's a banner year coming up here, 2013, for WeatherBrains. All right, thanks, Bill. Well, Marshall, I would echo James's comments from earlier that you just really seem to be taking a great direction, one of openness and inclusion, and I think you're to be commended for that, and we thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight. Tell again your Twitter accounts or email or anything that you want to plug where people get in touch with you or anything that you want them to read.
Sure. Well, yeah, I'm on Twitter at Dr. Shepard 2013 at Dr. Shepard 2013. And I would just encourage everyone to visit the American Meteorological Society's website, learn about the organization. I think even as the president of the organization, I'm still amazed at how much I'm learning about what we have to offer for students and young professionals with career centers. We have all kinds of opportunities. So, and also just a plug to the University of Georgia. A lot of people aren't familiar with our program, but we've got a really nice program at the University of Georgia in Atmospheric Sciences, AMS and NWS certified. We just became a member, the newest member of UCAR. So it's a program on the rise. So I'm happy to have some of our colleagues at some point in the future come back on and talk to you. Colleague John Knox is actually a Birmingham native and a big fan of James and others, so just wanted to make sure I got that out there as well.
Great. I have one last kind of silly question. You're based in Georgia, correct?
I am at the University of Georgia, yes.
So what's it like being the president of an organization that is headquartered in Boston? How does that work?
frequent flyer and frequent travel miles is what it's like. Because I'm actually, we do a lot of meetings virtually via phone, via formats like this. I am traveling the meetings. I joke that I should have a condo in D.C. I'm there so often. We also have an office in Washington, D.C. as well, and so just various things. So, that's just how we've done things. And, the interesting thing is it's only a one-year presidency, so, you can only do so much in a year. But, I vowed to come in as president, and hopefully at least someone knew that I was president 3 years later. Otherwise, I would be off or not. And I would mention, I think I was put up as the patsy to run because when I was asked to run, I don't think I was expected to win, and I did. So,
I guarantee you, whoever else would have won probably wouldn't have come on this show. So we appreciate you hopping on.
And you actually have a sitting AMS president before on the show. I didn't know if you had or not.
I'd have to defer to Bill on that, but I can't imagine we have.
Yeah, we've had Keith on the show, but we've never had a president.
Yeah, Keith Sider had mentioned that he'd been on, but I'm honored to be here, and certainly it's really nice. I've known Nate through Twitter, and it was nice to meet all of you guys. And of course, James is a legend, so it's just happy to be here. And Certainly anything I can do for you guys in the future. If you guys want to broadcast live from 2014 Atlanta AMS, let's do that.
We're in.
We'll do it. I got my hotel rooms today.
You shouldn't have made that offer.
No, I'm serious, actually. Let's talk about it.
Very good. Right. Well, Marshall, thank you again. James is back just in time to close out the show. Yeah, James.
Marshall, we want you to be the permanent AMS president, okay? You're not going away. You are in.
Well, I don't think my wife and family would like that too much.
I hear you. But again, thanks for taking the time to come on the show this week. You are just fantastic. We love what you do. The response on the show has been fantastic. I've seen a lot of it coming in tonight. But we do have to go. Weather Brains is the weekly show about weather. We typically record Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, and you can watch it live at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. Of course, most people listen later via their favorite podcast app or iTunes or whatever. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address, it's email@weatherbrains.com. Our Twitter accounts, our Facebook pages are all up on the website, weatherbrains.com. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks for listening. Have a great week and God bless.